Hi, it's Bob with Royal Spa. Simply said, Royal Spa hot tubs are simply better. Custom engineered to last a lifetime and cost less to operate, that's simply better. Our water has 24-hour circulation, filtration, aeration, and purification. That's simply better water. Natural minerals to enhance water quality and safe to use with Epsom salts. That's simply better relaxation. Simply said, Royal Spa hot tubs are simply better.
Royal Spa.
Only the best run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it. He has won his fourth Indianapolis 500.
Beyond the Bricks with Jay Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5. The Fan.
Indeed, Beyond the Bricks is not only outside the box. And thank you, as always, to Quality Supply and Tool for their sponsorship. But outside the road course as well, because it is back to the oval at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for this weekend on the 30th anniversary of the Brickyard 400. And that is where all attention turns, and it's left turns only as we take a look back at NASCAR's history in Indianapolis and a look forward on a big show tonight. Good evening to you on a Friday. My name is Jake Query. Eddie Garrison is the individual that puts this show together. And Mike Thompson is the brains and the audio behind it, who, of course, as we have mentioned before, is the essential audio archivist of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And Mike, going to be another fun show tonight because we get a chance to look back at kind of where this all began, as we have talked a lot over the course of the last week and on this program in general about the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which means, of course, the Indianapolis 500. But there is now a strong footprint and history within NASCAR. This is the 30th year of the Brickyard 400. And you've dipped into your Rolodex also to bring in one of your friends and a friend of this program to talk about all of it.
That's right. And I think our friend that'll join us in a minute will say, if I'm the brains behind this operation, we're in trouble.
Because, I mean, we know that, right?
Yeah, I think we're in trouble if I'm the brains behind this operation. But excited to bring in our friend Matt Yoakum tonight, who's joined us every year, actually, for the week of the Brickyard shows. And if you watched any NASCAR coverage over the years, you know Matt Yoakum, the best pit reporter in the business by far, I think. NASCAR, he's done IMSA, he's still doing IMSA, and he's just an outstanding pit reporter and one of my good friends. But people may not know that Matt has a real interest as well, not only in NASCAR, but he has a huge interest in IndyCar and open wheel racing and sports car racing. And so just happy to bring Matt on the program. So Matt, welcome, and join the Brain Trust with myself and Jake tonight.
I was just trying to, but I, since I'm on my phone, I can't go to Siri and start asking questions over the first great 3 minutes of intro there. But you're right. I remember back, and you know me, kind of a little bit of a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. You know, one thing starts, and Mike and all of our conversations through the years, and all of a sudden we start going down rabbit holes. We're digging up history and everything else, but it kind of takes me back to when there was a test session at MIS, and as a little kid, single digits, I remember sitting in both Sneva's car and Mario's car, Mr. Penske's McLaren's, and they're like, all right, you just steer, and they basically let me steer and sit in the car. Obviously, my feet were about 4 feet from the pedals, but steered the car back in, being towed by the golf cart. And, if it's history, man, that is certainly me. Love the current day stuff. But, Mike, you know, there's just something magical when you think back to all the great times, whether it's the Speedway or MIS, all through the years of IndyCar racing. And, you know, me too, big Ted Horn fan. So I go all the way back to the 30s.
That's right. Now, you just mentioned, you know, testing, and one of the things I want to bring up is that first test at the Brickyard. I was fortunate enough to have just one quick question with Davey Allison at MIS after he did the test, and Davey was just grinning ear to ear. And he didn't really get to talk much with other guys that day about anything else. But I got one quick question in, and I asked him about that Brickyard test. And he said something to the effect like, you know, I think it's going to happen. You know, it was so much fun, and I think it's going to happen. And you could tell how excited he was that there was a possibility that he was going to get to race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in a stock car. And of course, we know that that didn't happen because, you know, we lost him in the helicopter accident, and the anniversary was this past weekend of losing Davey. But talk a little bit about, you know, when that first test happened and what you remember of the guys' reactions. Because I know Dale Earnhardt, it meant so much to Dale Earnhardt. It meant so much to Davey and just the natural reaction of the garage area.
I think when you mention three words, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, already it gives people goosebumps. And it's just the history of that place. I mean, you had Eddie Wood, you know, one of the car owners of the Wood Brothers. I mean, he was sitting in his elementary school class, had a transistor radio with the cord going up the back of his shirt so that he could listen to the 1965 Indianapolis 500 because his dad and uncles were all pitting Jimmy Clark, who would go on and win the race. And he got in trouble by the teacher because she wasn't happy, but he didn't care because it was the Indianapolis 500. And so it's special to everyone for many different ways. And I think when you look back to the 90s and the rumor started about, you know, hey, there's a possibility. I remember we were family friends with Les Richter. And he was like, yeah, they're going to be going to Indianapolis for a test. We'll see how it goes. Don't tell anybody. And then when everybody showed up and they did the test, they did the mock races, and everybody, it was like, you're going, all right, you know, Christmas, we know it's December 25th, but, you know, if you're a driver, if you're a race fan, if you're a crew member, it could be the summer of 94, and that's what it ended up being. And so I think if you just go around and you ask everybody that was there that day for the test, but especially there for the race itself. And I was working for a little station down in Bristol, Tennessee, and we had a satellite truck, and we went up, and we did some reports back, and I did a story with Eddie. And the first thing he told me when he got there is he knew exactly which pit Jimmy Clark and his dad and uncles, you know, pitted from. And he went out there and he just sat on the wall and he just kind of took it all in. The sun was coming through the grandstands late afternoon. And it was one of those special moments for him just because it connected a piece of his family history going all the way back to 65.
Matt Yocum is our guest on Beyond the Bricks, talking about the Brickyard 400, the history of it, and, of course, that test, and then ultimately leading to the first running 30 years ago this year in 1994. Matt, wanted to ask your perspective on this. You have a long history in racing in both aspects. Obviously, the vast majority of your professional career has been involved with NASCAR on the Cup side of things. As somebody that grew up in Indianapolis, my vantage point would be the following, and feel free to tell me if it was different from your vantage point, but if you could expand on it. And that is that I wouldn't say that there was necessarily ill will between fans of open wheel racing and stock car racing, but they were, to a great extent, divided in the fact that there didn't seemingly seem to be a lot of crossover in terms of, and I'm talking about in the 80s and into the 90s. I mean, racing was racing, and I totally understand that. But it seemed to me, and maybe this is an Indianapolis bias coming out, so I wanted you to expand, that coming and racing and cementing the Indianapolis Motor Speedway as a venue for NASCAR and for Cup racing cemented the Cup Series as getting right into that upper stratosphere. And also, I think, cemented the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, not that it needed it, but as the premier venue. And as a result of that, it kind of blended and married the two fans, albeit perhaps maybe temporarily, into this reciprocal appreciation and love fest in the initial years. Your thoughts?
I think if you go back in time, you have to first start with the fact that way back in the day, it was a battleground. I mean, you had USAC versus NASCAR. And if you were a driver and you went to run a USAC stock car race, all of a sudden now you've got major issues and you might get, you know, suspended from NASCAR and vice versa. And so you had all of that as a backdrop as you go through the decades. And then when the USAC stock cars faded away and, you know, ARCA kind of came in a little bit and helped take up some of that, you know, territory. But it seemed like that's when it started to change. But also it changed, I felt like, when you started to see a lot more of the USAC drivers like Jeff Gordon, you know, a couple of years later, Tony Stewart, Ryan Newman. But it just seemed like you got to a certain place where, whether it was just difference in people and generationally. I mean, I remember talking to Mr. Clarence Cagle, great family friend of ours, lived in Ormond Beach when we lived down there when we moved from Michigan. And we would have all kinds of conversations. And he would tell me great stories of, you know, working for Mr. Holman and in different projects and how the track was when they took it over. And then you start to learn as you go through just the history of the culture of the time. And it just seemed to where it's almost like, you know, Ryan Blaney won last week at Pocono. He's my pick to win this year at the Brickyard. You know, he's a big Star Wars fan. You know, like they're always saying, you know, or if you're watching Ghostbusters, don't cross the sabers. But it's almost like the sabers crossed and you had two cultures that kind of blended together. It's almost like Hatfields and McCoys when they had the son and, yeah, and the daughter from each. They, you know, they married and both families be kind of came one. And I feel like that's where racing is in general. You've got so much crossover nowadays. And, you know, with IMSA as well, that I just think you've got a lot of people who are really becoming friends from different disciplines. And so I think it's more of just a blend of colors. And, you know, I think that's kind of where the sport has grown through all the different generations.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public. So we decided to sing about it.
When you roll a Charmin, I'm just soft on the potty. This is more so roll it back.
Charmin Ultra Soft is irresistibly soft and more absorbent, so you can use less. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Talking about the Hatfields and McCoys, Matt, the first year at the Brickyard, there was a little bit of Hatfields and McCoys between brothers, believe it or not. Remember the situation with Jeff Bodine and Brett Bodine? That was a pretty shocking situation for the first Brickyard.
Well, when you look at it and you go back and you're like, all right, this is the race, because – you know, winning the second Brickyard 400, that, you know, that's cool. But, you know, and, you know, unless you're Dale Earnhardt, some people, all right, who won race number two at the Brickyard? You know, people might not know, but they know who won the first. And that was Jeff Gordon. Everybody wanted to win the first. And when you look at where Brett Bodine was in his career, that would have just cemented his future in a top ride. Jeff Bodine, same thing. And you're looking at where each were in their lives at that time. And if either one of those guys could have won that race, but, you know, your family. And a lot of times, you know, people will treat family members a little bit harder than they would somebody else just because they're family. And you grew up with them and they stole your peas at the kitchen table, or, you know, they used up the rest of the ice cream when you're 7. You don't forget that stuff. And now you're looking at all that money, incredible purse, and the beautiful trophy, and to be the first Brickyard, because this is the race that everybody always dreamed of going to if you're a stock car person, but, you know, you couldn't make that transition to IndyCars. But now you are, and you've got that chance. So the New Yorkers, they certainly put on a show for a while.
And here's the thing. New York, when you think of the East Coast big cities, you think Philadelphia, city of brotherly love. In Indianapolis, it was the city of brotherly rivalry, if you will, on the track. Here it is, Bodine and Bodine, the 1994 inaugural Brickyard 400.
And the cars have run a half a lap under green. Brett Bodine is the 11th leader of the day. And with his lead, he becomes the third Bodine to lead in the event. There was contact between Jeff and Brett.
Looks like there might have been some contact between those two cars because Brett got his car. And a Jeff Bodine spins coming off turn four right in front of the entire field.
Look at everybody going to the inside to try to avoid the trouble, some coming down pit road. Well, you saw there contact between brothers, Brett and Jeff. There was minor contact of the two in turn three, and when they come off turn four, it looked like there was more contact, and Jeff spun around in front of the entire field.
Well, Jeff Bodine making the long walk back in the high hopes of a great finish on this day at Indianapolis, this inaugural day, washed out. Now, was it contact with your brother? Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, we're really running good out there. Hi, Kathy and Barry back home. I love you guys. Yeah, Brett spun me out. We've had some family problems and personal problems between us here lately, and he just unfortunately took it out on the racetrack with me, and never expected he'd do it. He's my brother, I still love him, but he spun me out.
When will you talk to him?
Pardon?
When will you talk to him?
He won't talk to me, so maybe never.
Maybe never, Matt. That was really an unbelievable situation. But when you look back at that first Brickyard 400, Matt, I think, you know, NASCAR, sometimes they, people talk about how things absolutely just kind of work out for NASCAR. I mean, obviously, we talk about the fight in 1979 with Cale and with Donnie and the snowstorm and all those events that worked out for NASCAR that day. But you couldn't have picked a better winner for the first Brickyard 400 than Jeff Gordon. I mean, that just worked out perfectly for NASCAR and for Jeff's career. I mean, that really sent Jeff into the stratosphere, didn't it?
Well, you know, the thing about it is that I go back to it time and time again. Now, if it wasn't for his crew chief, you know, Jeff might have been the Walmart greeter or something. He had that legendary guy from New Jersey. What was his name again?
I think it was Ray Evernham.
That's a guy you hang out with a little bit, isn't it?
Yep, that would be Ray walking by.
I was like, what the hell is going on?
Yep, my boy's up in Indy radio show. Yeah, and so Ray's walking by. That perfect timing. We're coming
for folks that don't know. Matt does some work with Ray Evernham, and they we're going to talk a little bit more about that in the second segment because Ray's bringing back the IROC name, and Matt's helping to do that, bring back the IROC name. And so it just happens that Ray Evernham's walking by as we're talking about the win in 1994 that he helped Jeff Gordon get as Jeff's crew chief.
And you know, you couldn't really make timing work any more perfect than that. But when you look at about that day, though, and Ray's involvement and Jeff's involvement and the Rainbow Warriors and how they all came together, I mean, think back to qualifying. And he's coming out of turn four, and that car is sideways, and he's leaving black marks right out of turn four coming to the checkers. I mean, it's just such a magical weekend. And, you know, like you mentioned, in so many ways, you could not write a movie script where the kid from Pittsburgh, you know, that people would go out and watch at Terre Haute and, you know, IRP and grew up watching him, you know, on Thursday Night Thunder and Saturday Night Thunder and hearing all those great calls, you know, with the Gary and Larry show. And those are the type of things that just all come together and make magic. And so many times it's hard to find that magical moment. They only come once a generation or so, it seems like, but it certainly did that day. And you could not have picked a better story for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, but also for NASCAR. And propelling from that race as both really continued on a steady growth.
As for the Bodines in that race, by the way, Brett finished second, Todd finished ninth, Jeff finished 39th. Speaking of Jeff's, as you just guys mentioned, it was Jeff Gordon from Pittsburgh that would win the inaugural Brickyard 400, and this is how it sounded.
Off of corner number four, Doyle Ford displays the Winston Cup victory. He brings the car through corner number one, okay, and onto the short chute.
There's Brent Bodine. It looks like Brent's getting a little bit closer, but does he have time? He is getting closer.
With less than one half lap to go for Jeff Gordon. He eyes turn number three.
Listen to the crowd as they acknowledge Jeff Gordon when he goes by.
It's an unbelievable situation in Indianapolis. Here he is in the fourth turn. This is his final trip around turn number four. And Jeff Gordon is about to write his name in the racing history books. Years from today, when 79 stock car races have been run here, we'll remember the name. Jeff Gordon, winner of the inaugural Brickyard 400.
Man, oh man, oh man.
And of course, Jeff Gordon would go on to do much more than that throughout the course of his career, but few things bigger than winning that first 1994 Brickyard 400 and really introducing himself transcendently to a fan base within motorsports. Matt Yoakum, a year later, it would be kind of a topsy-turvy race weekend thanks to Mother Nature at the Brickyard 400, but you go from a guy like Jeff Gordon, who maybe many people were hearing his name for the first time if they were just starting to pay attention to the Brickyard 400, then in year number two, one of the biggest names in the history of the sport would add his name into the record books at IMS. And Matt, we're talking about Dale Earnhardt.
I always go back to two different things. Number one, I got goosebumps 30 years later listening to Bob Jenkins and Benny Parsons call that final lap. And you hear those golden voices. And to me, Bob Jenkins, when you think of NASCAR, you always think of Bob Jenkins' wonderful calls, whether it's Alan Kulwicki winning the championship at Atlanta or Jeff Gordon's first Brickyard win. And then how appropriate to have Benny Parsons. Benny Parsons threw in a man, oh man, one of his signature lines. And like you mentioned, the next year, I'll never forget having, I think it was the Tonight Show. And Dale Earnhardt was on there and he goes, all right, well, Dale Earnhardt, the second winner of the Brickyard 400, he goes, I'm the first man. And everybody started laughing because they used to always call Jeff Wonderboy. And so it was always Earnhardt's little dig on Jeff Gordon, the fun that they would have together. And, you know, they were business partners on some different things and such immense respect between the two and friendship. But, you know, it was almost appropriate, just like Earnhardt winning at Daytona in 98, the 500, it seemed appropriate that the person to follow up, Jeff Gordon, the future generation of the sport, is the guy who, you know, helped, you know, carry the sport through his generation, and that was Dale Earnhardt. And, you know, that's one of those, again, special days. So many unique storylines from that day with Mother Nature and everything else, but to have the Big E, you know, score that trophy, that too almost seemed appropriate. Like if you're going to write a script for each chapter of history of the Brickyard 400, it seemed appropriate that the Black Three was the guy to take home race number two.
And this is how it sounded when he took home race number two, the 1995 Brickyard 400.
White flag will be in the wind this time around. We're into the last lap of the Brickyard 400.
Dale Earnhardt has a comfortable lead. Rusty Wallace does not have a comfortable lead over Dale Jarrett. Is going to turn one.
Dale Earnhardt, third in money, third in points, about to pick up a big bundle of money in the short chute. Straight on into number two, Gary Kinney.
Dale Earnhardt made a mistake at the beginning of last year's race. If he does not make a mistake at the end of this one, he's going to win it. About eight car lengths now separate.
Two races he want to win before he quits, and that is the Brickyard 400 and the Daytona 500. He less down than two turns away from winning the Brickyard.
Dale Earnhardt through the North Short Chute. He has the comfortable lead. Rusty Wallace.
That was obviously a special day with Dale winning, and it means a lot to all of us. But I know something that really means a lot to you, and people may not remember this specifically, but you did the last on-camera interview with Dale the day Dale we lost Dale, the day he passed away. How much does that mean to you personally, that people may know how close you and Dale were. I don't think I've ever even had this conversation with you. How much does that mean to you personally that you did that last on-camera interview with Fox with Dale before he passed away?
Well, that whole morning was really, it's one of those days where you look back on it now, and in many ways, it's much more clear. But at the time, it was the first year of Fox, the first Speed Weeks for Fox. And we had basically covered every series, every practice session, qualifying. I think going into the 500, that was going to be my 38th show of Speed Week. And so you're running on adrenaline. And I'll never forget two things from that day. Number one, sitting outside the hauler waiting for Dale. And he came out, popped out, and sat down in the chair. And he says, "All right, how much time?" I said, "Well, we're going to come back from commercial, and they're going to come straight to us, and then we're going to do one question, and away you go." He goes, "Okay." And we came back from commercial, and they went to Genius Alaska. He goes, "See, they lie to you all the time, Matt. They lie to you all the time." And we started laughing. And about 6 months later, Russ Thompson, another great friend of ours, and such an incredible historian and so passionate about auto racing, he sent me this email, and because he was my pit spotter that day, and he said, "Hey, I'm not sure if you've seen this or even know it exists, but I wanted to send it along just in case." And I said, "Okay." I said, I clicked on the attachment, and it was the picture of Dale and I, and it was right when he had said, "They lie to you every time," and I'm laughing. And so it was really cool to have that moment, because when you're working in the sport, you know, you're going through, you've got so many different things you're doing, so many stories you're following, and you never do anything for yourself. And so when you have something like that, that's really the only picture that I've got of Dale and I together. And then a couple of years later, I had a friend who sent a couple of different pictures of Dale and I together during my ESPN days. And so those are very treasured. But when you look back just to that race and that day and how it changed racing on so many levels, and especially the safety aspect of it, because, you know, what happened to him, you know, everyone was like, "Look, I mean, if it can happen to him, it can happen to anybody," because, you know, he was the guy that walked on water, and he could see the forest through the trees onto the next forest. He had such vision, you know. It was just such a, and you know, I see one of the old DEI crew members, Pete Rondeau, once a week, and Pete and I'll talk about it, because you'll always come up with it. "What do you think Big E would say about that? Or what do you think the sport would be different in this way or that way if the Big E, you know, hadn't passed?" And so, you know, that was one of those days. And, but I still have my auto insurance through Steve Cook, Nationwide, because that's who the Big E told me to go to when I moved to Charlotte. He was like the welcome wagon. And then I used to get my hair cut for probably a good 25 years from Steve Ellsworth at Ellsworth Hair and Design, because that's where the Big E went. He was like the welcome wagon. "This is where you go to get your insurance. This is where you go to get your haircut." And so special, special guy. And everyone, sadly, you know, misses him so much to this day. And it would be so cool, you know, had he lived, for him to be there for the 30th and be a part of the celebration, you know, of all that's going to take place, especially being back on the oval and back how it should be.
This is how it sounded February 18th, 2001. Matt Yoakam and Dale Earnhardt.
"Best of luck. Let's go to Matt Yoakam. 1 year ago, Steve, Dale Earnhardt less than confident with the current rules package to win his second Daytona 500, but he won the last plate race of 2000, and Dale looking very strong during Speedweeks. Can you win your second 500 today?
Well, we got a good shot at it. Got a good race car. Wasn't really excited about the car yesterday afternoon, the last practice, but the car, it come around. I think it's going to be okay. We got a good engine in it, but a little wind today. A little exciting. I think it's going to be some exciting racing. Going to see something you probably hadn't ever seen on Fox.
The seven-time champ rolls off seven today. Genie?
Goes without saying that that is a bit haunting, but nonetheless, that is Dale Earnhardt with Matt Yoakum before the 2001 Daytona 500. We come back, another driver we can reflect upon that Matt knew well that left his footprint on NASCAR. As we keep Matt Yoakum for one more segment and find out, as you got a little preview there with Ray Evernham, some of the things that he's working on today. We'll do that when we return to Beyond the Bricks.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
When you're rolling Charmin, ultra soft on the potty. This is most of roll it back, everybody. Charmin's irresistibly soft and hella nice. A crib is always soft.
It's our potty vibes.
It's cushioned and clean, so our cheeks feel fine.
So worth it.
Everybody wanna touch the sky.
Charmin ultra soft is irresistibly soft and more absorbent, so you can use less. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Hi, I'm Tim Richmond, and this is an original poster of my Indianapolis 500 career created by racing artist Ron Burton. This poster is now available for $5 at your 40 Guarantee Auto stores throughout Indiana. I hope you will follow my racing progress throughout May as I drive the Guarantee Auto WTTV special in this year's Indianapolis 500, the greatest spectacle in racing.
One of the drivers that, of course, ran and made a name for himself in open wheel and then showed real talent in the stock cars, talking about the late, great Tim Richmond, who, by the way, recently, when I was at Mid-Ohio for the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course IndyCar race, was in Ashland, Ohio, went over to pay respects to Tim Richmond, his hometown and final resting place for one of racing's true colorful personalities. Jake Query here along with Mike Thompson. Matt Yoakum is our guest tonight. And Mike, oftentimes as we do on Beyond the Bricks, this is a great opportunity to pay tribute to some of those drivers who have really left a footprint in racing and for the race fans that will be enjoying this year's Brickyard 400.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk a little bit with Matt because, Matt, we've been so lucky to have, you know, the King with us for so long. And we had David Pearson, you know, he lived a long life and fans got to meet and, you know, greet and talk to him a lot of times. And Cale Yarborough lived a long life and we just lost Cale. But, you know, NASCAR fans, we've had a lot of royalty that, you know, fans have been able to meet Bobby Allison and guys like that for a long period of time. And losing Cale was a difficult blow at the end of last year, but Cale was signing autographs right up till the end, you know, as much as he could. And Cale loved the fans. And I know you had a special relationship with Cale.
When you look at Cale, and I go back to, and it's so funny because Tony Stewart and I are kind of like brothers from a different mother. And people are, hey, man, I heard Stewart's got he's got some kind of pet monkey or something. That's crazy. That's got to be the most unique thing. Like, no, Cale Yarborough had a lion. And, oh, hey, what about, like, no, Cale Yarborough did that. Cale Yarborough jumped out of an airplane. Cale Yarborough flew his ultralight. One day, snapping a power line when they'd put up power lines on the back 40 near his property down in South Carolina. I mean, so many things. I mean, he crash-landed his airplane with his wife and young daughter going from one race to another. And he has one of the Smothers brothers and James Garner come pick him up. He landed on a logging road. he just saw a hole in the clouds, and he took the chance and dove for it, and he was able to get them on the ground safely. And he just was one of those guys that it's like peeling an onion, man. There's so many layers and so many cool stories that compound. And I got to tell you, if you've never read his book, I highly suggest it, because you'll learn so many things about him that will make you respect his success, because he came from nothing. And he ended up, you know, with a great business sense, played semi-pro football, so super tough, but yet he had three daughters. And the whole reason why Junior Johnson and Cale Yarborough parted ways was because his young daughter, BJ, was sitting out back one day, and he's walking out to go to with Junior to fly to do a deal with Pepsi, and it was going to be the Mountain Dew car. And he said, "Hey, why are you guys out riding your bikes?" And BJ said, "Dad, they're broken." He goes, "Well, why didn't you tell me?" She goes, "Dad, we've told you three times." Boom. If you're a dad, you know that hits you so hard in the gut. And he says, "All right." He walked back in, called Junior, said, "I can't go. You're going to have to cancel it. Something more important has come up. I'll explain later." He spent all day running back and forth to the hardware store, getting parts to fix the bikes. And that's what ended the, you know, the era of such success, three championships and all those Daytona 500 wins and wins in general with Junior. And he just was one of those guys, when you're talking about a Mount Rushmore, I mean, he's definitely on it, you know. And then you talked about Tim Richmond. Oh my gosh. I mean, what a talent he was. And, you know, I love the fact that, you know, Jake went and visited, you know, his burial. His sister still lives down here in Charlotte, and I was able to end up getting a helmet from her of Tim's. And when she goes, "No, this helmet has sat here forever on his credenza in his house." And so she goes, "Well, let me just reach inside to make sure that there isn't any cash or anything stuffed inside, because, you know, we never moved it." Well, sure enough, she reached her hand inside and pulled out a pair of gloves. And she goes, "Well, the gloves were in the helmet. I guess he wore them that day, so they've got to go with the helmet." And so one of my prized possessions. But he was such an incredible guy that, you know, you sit there and so kind. He would work my mom's cocktail parties when she managed the Peterson Publishing account, manager of special events. And he would always come to her cocktail parties at the big races, and he would never take any. She'd be like, "Timmy, let me give you." No. I just love doing it. I love people, and I love helping the sport. And, you know, so he was such a talent that there's so many guys that would have fewer championships, you know, had we not lost him. But, you know, he's one of those people that leave their mark with me, with you, Mike, with Jake, and so many others that make this sport so special. And it doesn't matter what the discipline is. Racing culture is racing culture. If you're a racer, you're a racer.
That's right. And a guy, as we talked a little bit about at the beginning of the segment, a guy who was a racer, Cale Yarborough. And this is what it sounded like when he won the 1968 Daytona 500. And I think, Matt, I think you're going to enjoy the call here from Bill Fleming on the call of the 1968 500.
There's the white flag with one lap to go. You'll recall that in July, Cale took the lead on the fourth turn to win this race. And now he has a lead over Leroy, but as Chris Economaki mentioned, Leroy might be in a position to move pie in the draft. And here they go, one more turn to make. It's Cale Yarborough, Leroy right behind him. Here it is. Can Leroy put enough into that engine to come down the home stretch? It doesn't look like he's going to make it. Cale fights him off. And the checkered flag is out for Cale Yarborough, and there is Leroy Yarborough right behind. Exactly 1 second. Cale beating Leroy Yarborough, and that is the difference between $47,250 and $17,000 second place money. A great race run by both Cale and Leroy. We'll be back to have the victory lane ceremony in just a moment.
Now, Matt, I got another piece of audio you're going to like from ABC coming up here in a second, because we're going to talk a little IROC. You're involved with Ray Everham, as we mentioned a little bit ago, in the revival of the IROC name. And I'm going to play here for you, before we talk about that, the revival, we're going to play the open with Jim McKay, 1978 IROC on ABC. So, Matt, I know you're going to love this, because I know how much you love IROC history as much as I do. And I pulled this clip just for you. So, 1978 IROC on ABC, just for you.
Around the world, Formula One Grand Prix race drivers are international celebrities. In the American Southland, a form of racing has grown with which the average citizen can identify. Grand National Stock Car Racing. Here you can cheer for the make of car as well as the driver. Yet another world exists on the road courses of the United States. IMSA racing is called. Right turns and left. The romance of racing through the countryside. And then there is racing as practiced at America's national shrine to the sport, Indianapolis. Once each year, 12 of the world's great drivers are gathered together for a series of four races that identically prepare tomorrow's. The question being, if the cars were all the same, who would be the best driver of all? Well, in 1974, it was a man who appropriately raced on both road and oval courses, the late Mark Donahue, Indianapolis champion and Grand Prix star. In 1975, Bobby Unser survived this wild crash to go on and win the series. Bobby Unser of the Albuquerque Racing Plant. For the past 2 years, the winner has proved that consistency can be king in the sport. Without winning a race in series in either year, A.J. Foyt piled up enough points to win the title in 76 and 77. The great A.J. Foyt. The starting line again in the World Series of Auto Racing.
Racing, featuring the International Race of Champions. Brought to you by Monroe, maker of the revolutionary Radio-Matic, the best riding shock Monroe has ever built. Test ride Radio-Matic today. And by Yamaha Motorcycles for 1978. From street to off-road, from dual purpose to motocross. When you know how they're built, you'll buy a Yamaha.
Gotta love the Rocky music in that, Matt Yoakam. And, you know, Rocky is one of those that every time he was down, he got back up. That's exactly what IROC is like, right? And the fact that it is a fabulous form of racing. And we mentioned it earlier, teased it a little bit, Matt. Tell us what you've got going on in terms of getting up off the mat, I guess, for that racing series.
Well, when you look at all of the history that was made, Roger Penske, Les Richter, Mike Phelps came together and came up with the idea of IROC. And it was the all-star race before there were all-star races. And to have James Hunt, Niki Lauda come over, you know, from Europe, Formula One drivers, to go up against IndyCar's best, NASCAR's best. And it was just a fantastic period because people had opportunity with their schedules. You know, unlike now where everyone is just so jammed, if they're not on track somewhere, they're at a sponsor appearance or what have you. But back then they had the time. And those guys loved doing it because they never got a chance to hang out with Richard Petty if you're James Hunt or vice versa. You know, Mario hung out with everybody and so did Foyt. But, you know, it was really a cool culture. And, you know, thanks to Jim McKay, because he was such a shepherd of storytelling. And the way he told stories and his word usage and the fact that I made $25 because I had to take care of his jacket. So that way when they were ready to shoot something and he's like, all right, I'll shoot. Where did I lay down my jacket? So as a little kid, a little bit of summer money there. But, you know, really cool that Ray Everham and Rob Kaufman have acquired the trademark and they're trying to kind of put some battery cables to the old IROC culture and the nameplate and everything else. And they're going to have an IROC reunion this coming weekend up in Connecticut at Lime Rock Park. And it's going to be a Friday, Saturday show. Fans can – there's going to be almost 25 vintage IROC cars. And when you're walking through, whether it's the Gen 1 Camaros, which we call them Gen 1 because it would have been the 74, through 77 Speed Weeks, and then the Gen 2 Camaros that came on, which really are my favorite. I love the fender flares and you name it. That's the car that you see Al Unser almost go into Lake Lloyd at Daytona in one of the most spectacular IROC crashes in that Raspberry 6. But there's going to be so many cool cars that you're going to get a chance to be up close and personal with. There's the School Bus 15 that was the second IROC car built for the 78 season. In fact, Paul Newman took some of his buddies to Sears Point with that car in December of 77. It was James Brolin, Clint Eastwood, and Gene Hackman, along with Bob Bondurant and George Fulmer. And they went out and they had such a fun day, just pals out putting the car through its paces. Somebody blew up the transmission, so they changed it during lunch. And those guys all choppered down to Sausalito or someplace for lunch, and they brought the IROC guys back McDonald's on the helicopter for working through lunch. So so many cool pieces of history that you're going to get a chance to see. And so I think it's when you look at all the different vintage racing organizations out there, and I love what HSR is doing with, NASCAR Classic now. You've got a chance to go see old cup cars. And this is an opportunity to go see cars that only ran four times a year, and they have incredible legacies as far as the drivers who competed behind the wheels. So if you're a fan that, you've been around forever and you call yourself a core fan and the weather and what the barometric pressure was in 77 at Riverside, or you're a new fan but you want to learn about the history, this is the perfect opportunity. So Friday and Saturday this weekend at Lime Rock Park in Connecticut, come on out. There's going to be a host of drivers. Jeff Bodine's going to be there. Danny Sullivan's going to be there. Mark Martin's going to be there. Little Al's going to be there. So many guys are coming back. And then there's some guys that, just missed that window of opportunity that never had a chance to drive an IROC car who are going to be up there also racing, and they'll be a part of the whole IROC festivities. So it's really something that I think is going to be one of those events that if you have the opportunity to go, you're just going to say to yourself, oh, I should have gone to that, and I didn't go. No, you can't do that. You got to go.
Matt, it's a pleasure each and every year when we do this program to have you on to get your insights and also to take a look back at some great memories, great times at one of the great facilities, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and, of course, part of that cement of the Speedway being what it is in motorsports has to do with all of the different racing series that have come here. Appreciate the time, as always, and certainly hope you enjoy the 30th running of the Brickyard 400.
Well, Jake, I can't thank you enough for including me on Beyond the Bricks, and I love getting together with you guys and talk history. Still have my garage pass from that inaugural Brickyard, one of the few that I saved because it was one of those special days. So I can't wait to see the 30th. But, again, thanks for having me on to talk old racing and new racing. You guys, as I always say, you guys are a treasure for the racing community. And I know everybody up in Indianapolis knows what you guys bring and how important you are to auto racing. But, you can go ahead and magnify that by three because without you guys doing what you do, that's how we educate the new fans, by hearing all those fantastic clips. So appreciate it, boys, and you guys have a great race week.
Appreciate it. Matt Yocum joining us here on Beyond the Bricks. We'll come back, put a tie on all of it here with Eddie Garrison, Mike Thompson. I'm Jake Query. It is Beyond the Bricks.
We're for Washington. We love Febreze's new scent.
Refresh and energize.
So much we made a song about it.
Smells like paradise.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
A lot of fun tonight, taking a look back at the 94 Brickyard 400. Of course, some of the great names that we have lost in the sport of racing. And as always, a pleasure to have Matt Yocum on to help us do all of it. For Mike Thompson, Eddie Garrison, I'm Jake Query. Thanks for listening to Beyond the Bricks.
Introducing a fresh new way to save with your Kroger points. Choose between saving on fuel or saving on your next Kroger delivery order with new rewards cash. You'll still earn points every time you shop Kroger delivery. Then when you're ready to redeem your points, you can choose to save up to $1 per gallon at the pump or redeem your points to save on your next delivery order. It's a fresh new way to save. Your points, your choice. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Not available in all locations. Restrictions apply. See site for details.